morning, everyone. And we're going to open a work session on House Bill 2298. Teresa, you want to refresh your memory?
Yes, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2298 was first heard on Monday's hearing. This was from AFSCME, and it was the bill essentially, if you remember, changes the maximum cap of donated leave pool that a local agency and state agency can provide from the employee's base pay to their total compensation. And the donated pool is just for military leave. And at the time of a public hearing, we were waiting for the fiscal impact statement, and there's a minimal impact, and no statement was issued.
Thank you very much. I'd accept a motion on House Bill 2298, if there's one out there.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask a question?
We're going to open up questions in a moment, Representative.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2298 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Holvey.
Is that correct? It doesn't have a subsequent referral,
does
it?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Holvey moves House Bill 2298 to the floor with due pass recommendation. Representative Esquivel.
Yes. Sorry, I'm having some technological difficulties. I have IS down here with my computer, so I'm broke down. But on this, there is no impact at all whatsoever, and does that go into the county and city level as well?
Mr. Chair, Representative Esquivel, I don't know the exact dollar amounts. The Red State Fiscal Office issue was a minimal fiscal impact in which the impact is less than the trigger that would necessitate having it be reviewed by the Ways and Means Committee. I don't have the specifics in front of me of the amounts.
Okay.
That's not provided.
So there's no fiscal impact.
There is no fiscal impact.
Okay.
Any more questions? Kevin, Representative Vice Chair Cameron, and Representative Edwards. We're in a work session on House Bill 2298, and Representative Holvey has moved it to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And we're just open for questions, concerns, comments this time on that bill. So is there any further comments or questions? Or anything anybody feels compelled to get on the record today on that bill? All right. Seeing none, clerk will call the roll, please.
Thank you.
Edwards?
Aye.
Representative
Aye.
Representative Holvey?
Aye.
Representative Kennemer?
Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Vice Chair Barton?
Aye.
Vice Chair Kennemer?
Aye.
And Chair Doppler?
Aye. Okay. So moved. Would anyone like to volunteer to carry this on the floor?
I would.
All right, Representative Esquivel will carry House Bill 2298 on the floor. Open this work session on House Bill 2298. I'm opening public hearing on House Bill 2420. Teresa, you?
Yes, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2420 establishes the presumption that specified cancers are considered to be compensable occupational diseases under the workers' compensation system for non-volunteer firefighters if the firefighter has completed at least 5 years of employment, is first diagnosed by a physician after July 1st, 2009, and the cancer has resulted from their employment as a firefighter. The measure also outlines when the presumption can be rebutted and when the claim can be denied. It also requires the presumption be applied to claims by who work for cities that provide a separate disability and retirement system. You do have in front of you, members, the revenue impact statement, which is none, and a fiscal impact statement.
Thank you. Okay. I'd like to call Hasina Squires and Bob Livingston, please.
Yes.
This right here. You're going to hear more about that. This may be reduced. Whenever you're all ready, folks.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bob Livingston, Legislative Director of the Oregon State Firefighters Council. I am also a firefighter here in Salem, but I want to make it clear that my comments and testimony today reflect those opinions of myself and, more importantly, the opinions of the Oregon State Firefighters Council. And with that, Mr. Chair, I appreciate the opportunity to be coming in front of you to discuss House Bill 2420. House Bill 2420 is a great example of stakeholders coming together to recognize and solve a problem that confronts firefighters. This is a bill with broad support. Over the past several decades, numerous studies have been conducted to reinforce what many of us in the fire service have known for years. Firefighters, during the course of their duties, are exposed to many hazards and toxic substances that place them at greater risk of contracting cancer while protecting the lives and properties of Oregonians. This issue is also not new to the Oregon legislature, having been discussed in various ways over a decade. What is different is the spirit of cooperation, additional science, and recognition by many stakeholders that we should work together to draft legislation to address this problem. House Bill 2420 is the product of this cooperative effort. By working together and after nearly a year of discussions, the Special Districts Association of Oregon and the Oregon State Firefighters Council took the lead in crafting legislation, which was then shared with other stakeholder groups. Today, I am honored and pleased to report that the Oregon Fire Chiefs Association, Oregon Fire District Directors Association, the City of Portland, and the Oregon Volunteer Firefighters Association all support House Bill 2420. In addition, House Bill 2420 was unanimously supported by the Management Labor Advisory Committee, which reviews and makes recommendations to the Oregon legislature and the governor on bills that impact Oregon workers' compensation system. While House Bill 2420 is certainly historical and enjoys the support of many stakeholders, it is not unique or even trailblazing. In fact, if House Bill 2420 becomes law, Oregon would be roughly the 30th state to provide a legal recognition for certain cancers. Today, I would like to highlight to you the major components of House Bill 2420 and the principles used in developing this piece of legislation. The following principles were applied: cost and predictability, fairness and applicability. It was agreed and recognized that cost and predictability were important factors in reaching an agreement on House Bill 2420. That is why House Bill 2420 has a starting date of July 1st, 2009 for the initial diagnosis of a cancer in order to be afforded the presumption. Second, a firefighter will only be afforded the presumption for prostate cancer until the firefighter's 55th birthday. Third, to address the concerns regarding tobacco usage as well as cost and predictability, an employer can rebut the presumption on the basis of clear and convincing evidence that the use of tobacco is the major contributing cause of the cancer. Fourth, volunteer firefighters will not be afforded a presumption for these 12 cancers, but will still have the right to file a claim without the benefit of the presumption. Fifth, a firefighter must have at least 5 years of employment before being eligible for the presumption. Sixth, the benefit of the presumption will only last for an additional 84 months following their employment as a firefighter. As you can see, major concessions were made by the Oregon State Firefighters Council, but we recognize the importance of providing employers with predictability and cost-containing measures. Conversely, we appreciate the willingness of the various employer groups to recognize the fairness and applicability of passing legislation to afford a presumption to Oregon's career firefighters. In reviewing the various scientific studies, synergistic effects, healthy worker effects, and other related subject matters, it was agreed that 12 cancers will be recognized for the presumption. This puts Oregon somewhere in the middle to low end of the 30 states as it relates to the number of cancers recognized under a presumption. However, we also recognize that a presumption shifts the burden of proof from the employee to the employer, and that receiving unanimous support from the Management Labor Advisory Committee is significant and shows that this is a good piece of legislation. In addition, House Bill 2420 will also clarify how a certain case may be rebutted if the employer elects to deny the claim, as articulated on page 2 in 5B, lines 28 through 32. Specifically, the parties to this agreement spent a great deal of time discussing how cases may be rebutted if a claim was to be denied by the employer. In conjunction with other elements of paragraph 5B, the words "in material part" will be utilized to adjudicate denied claims. The parties have specifically chosen the phrase "in material part" based upon the Court of Appeals of the State of Oregon decision in Mize versus Comcast. The parties also agreed that all career firefighters who meet the eligibility requirements for the presumption should be covered as a matter of fairness. That is why Section 6 of the bill is necessary in order to assure that this piece of legislation is applied to firefighters who have a separate compensation system. And I am pleased to inform you that the City of Portland has taken a position of support on this piece of legislation. And Mr. Chair, if I could step back for a minute, I'd like to recognize the hard work and efforts of David Barenberg, who is a governmental affairs spokesperson for the City of Portland. Since the City has taken a position of support, during that time we've had many subsequent conversations addressing this bill, including what applies and what doesn't apply. We're in agreement that the presumption will apply to the City of Portland, as well as the 84-month tail also is the intent, as well as what is in the bill. I can assure you that we will continue to have dialogues with Mr. Barenberg, like we have with many stakeholders, and I just want to recognize that we appreciate his efforts in being a liaison between the elected officials from the City of Portland and our organization. So in closing, Mr. Chair, if I could, I wish to thank Chair Schaffler, this entire committee, and especially the groups who have worked so hard to make House Bill 2420 possible. HB 2420 is significant in that it represents a shift in thinking. Many times in the past, employee and employer groups seem to have always found a way to say no rather than finding a way to say yes. House Bill 2420 serves as a reminder to all of us that hard work, open communication, and working together to find a solution is possible. Please recognize these efforts by supporting and moving House Bill 2420 with a due pass recommendation to the floor of the Oregon House. And with that, Mr. Chair, with your permission, I would like to introduce my colleague, and I think she'll do the same, Asina Squires, before any questions, because I do believe that she'll be able to clarify this cooperative effort even further.
Squires, go ahead.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Hasina Squires, and I appear before you today on behalf of several organizations. I'd like to just make note that this is probably the first time I've ever testified at the table with Bob Livingston. For those of you who have never or are new to the building, you really do not understand the magnitude of this sitting next to him. I did choose to sit on his right. He sat on my left. There's been a tremendous, as Bob's previously stated, a tremendous amount of effort and work has gone into this piece of legislation. I appear before you today on behalf of the Special Districts Association of Oregon, which represents approximately 900 special service districts throughout the state of Oregon, including fire, library, parks, 911. Our largest member of the association is indeed rural fire protection districts, which make up about 275 of those 900 members. I'm also here today to represent a couple of clients that are not my direct clients, but their executive director, Genoa Ingram, is in the audience for that for this, and we've tried to consolidate our testimony. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Fire District Directors Association, and that is an association made up solely of elected officials. Rural Fire Protection District boards have 5-member boards, and I'm here today to represent their position in support of House Bill 2420. I'm also here on behalf of the Oregon Volunteer Firefighters Association, which represents approximately 4,500 emergency medical technicians and firefighters, some paid and some volunteer. For those of you who do not know, Special Districts Insurance Services operates, we're self-insured, we operate our own insurance pool, and RFPDs, fire districts, make up is the largest type of special district for which we write workers' compensation insurance coverage. So I'm also testifying on behalf of our insurance trust, and that's why I feel like I can speak confidently about the fiscal impact of this bill and the effect on insurance rates. We have approximately 165 rural fire protection districts that we write insurance coverage for, and in tab 4 of my testimony, you can see a listing of all of those rural fire protection districts, and they're broken out by county, so you can look to see which fire districts we insure. I think it's important to note the unanimous support we received from MLAC, Management Labor Advisory Committee. I know last week you had a summary from John Schiltz, the director of the Workers' Compensation Division, about what MLAC is. Contained in my testimony in tab 3 is additional information, but It's a very serious thing, and you'll learn as for the new people, as the session proceeds, for MLAC to take a position of support on a bill. As Chair Schaffler indicated to you last week, if a bill is not supported by MLAC and it reaches the governor's desk, he will veto it. So it's very significant and very important, and as Representative Witt knows, who a former member of the Management Labor Advisory Committee, a lot of work goes into that process. There are 5 management members, 5 labor members. They're not appointed willy-nilly. They are appointed by the governor and subject to Senate confirmation, and they do a lot of work during the interim with stakeholders. I'd like to start by talking and just clearly articulating that cancer presumption is not something new. The current statute provides for cancer presumption with respect to heart-lung. In tab 7 of my testimony, you will see a comparison and breakdown. I'm going to give you everything you ever wanted to know about what the existing statute says and how this bill, House Bill 2420, differentiates from the current heart-lung cancer presumption. So I think it's important for you to understand that there is this type of presumption in the statute currently for heart-lung, and this simply expands upon that existing presumption that has already been enacted. Typically, you will not see me come forward and support on behalf of employer groups a presumption, because it does shift the burden of proof from the employee to the employer. However, this bill, as Bob previously stated, has been an incredible long road. I think I've been working in this building with Bob for, I think Bob and I have been fighting with each other, how about that, for 10 years on presumptions, hepatitis C presumption, hepatitis B presumption, cancer, on and on and on ad nauseum. And last legislative session, for those of you who were here, we had a very, very contentious legislative session, Senate Bill 560, which was advanced through the Senate and failed to pass the House very, very narrowly. And I think Bob and I both recognized at that point that it would be better to sit down and have some sort of a dialogue and discussion so he could hear what our clear objections were and we could provide some certainty with him about what our objections were. So during the 2008 interim, we committed to each other that we would bring our 2 lawyers in the room and we would clearly articulate what our policy disagreements were, and we would let the lawyers fight about the words. So the words in the legislation are incredibly and extremely important, but the policy concepts are really what I'm here today to capture. The provisions of House Bill 2420 will expand the cancer presumption that exists in the statute to 12 cancers: brain, colon, stomach, testicular, prostate, multiple myeloma, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, I can pretty much do it through memory, throat, mouth, rectal, breast, and leukemia. It will apply to non-volunteer firefighters. The intention of this bill, and I'll articulate that a little later, more further, is intended to apply to paid firefighters in the state of Oregon, not volunteers, and we have some safeguard language in there that clearly articulates that. The cancer presumption will apply to cancers first diagnosed on or after July 1 of 2009. It will only apply to prostate cancer until you reach the age 55. After age 55, prostate cancer will no longer apply under the presumption. It will still apply as a compensable cancer, but it will not be subject to the provisions of House Bill 2420. And then finally, the cancer is rebuttable in 2 ways. Many of you who had to listen to me last session about this issue of the burden of proof and is the cancer unrelated, and we were talking often about how we could not prove a negative. Bob has clearly articulated that standard that we have inserted into the statute. Rather than the cancer being unrelated, we have inserted language that the cancer must be caused or contributed to in material part by, and that's a legal standard of evidence, and Bob and I let the lawyers fight about that one for quite a long time. And then finally, the cancer is also rebuttable if the employer can show that tobacco use was the major contributing cause of the cancer. So those are the key elements of House Bill 2420. Who does this bill apply to? As I indicated, it is our intent to apply this bill to paid firefighters. There are approximately 3,200 in the state of Oregon. Special Districts Association of Oregon writes workers' comp insurance coverage for nearly half of those. After that, the city of Portland makes up 20%. After that, Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue and Clackamas County Fire District, number one, the two largest fire districts in the state of Oregon, make up the other 10% of the paid firefighters in the state of Oregon, and they are supportive of the legislation. Their insurance, their workers' comp coverage is written through private carrier. So 80% of the entire fire service work comp written coverage supports this legislation. The remaining approximate 20% is represented by the city county insurance services. We do not apply this bill to volunteer firefighters in two ways. We define in statute what a non-volunteer firefighter is, so that is to be interpreted as a paid firefighter. And that person is a firefighter who receives salary, hourly wages equal to or above the minimum wage, or other compensation. And we go on to justify, to articulate things that are not compensation. And there's a reason for that, because there are a whole host of things that fire districts do to pay volunteer firefighters. We have some fire districts that give them a toaster. If you respond to a call, we have fire districts that will pay $5 per call, $5 for standby time, a whole host of things, travel reimbursements. All of those things are articulated in the bill as what is not deemed to be compensation for purposes of non-volunteer firefighters, and that's how we get at the issue of defining what a volunteer is and what a volunteer is not. With respect to the fiscal impact of House Bill 2420, I know that you do have a fiscal impact statement in front of you. Unfortunately, it does not include my fiscal impact. I'm not really sure why legislative fiscal didn't ask us. They didn't ask, but I'm going to tell. And our fiscal is based upon five very significant reasons that we were able to develop this fiscal impact. One, and these were absolute key points that Mr. Livingston and I negotiated, and I'd like to commend him and his association for recognizing the importance of these items, and these, for those of you who have been around, are nothing new to you. These were our objections last legislative session, so not to say that neither of us got what we wanted out of the negotiations, but we were able to get enough out of the negotiations that we could provide some fiscal certainty, which is what our main objection was last legislative session. So, number one, we needed a clear starting date, July 1, 2009. We needed no retroactivity. We needed the ability to claim reserve and predict what the cost was going to be. We couldn't have firefighters who had existing cancers being lumped in with this cancer presumption and us not having the adequate claim reserve. So we were able to negotiate that. This issue of the burden of proof, I won't go on ad nauseum about it, the issue of whether or not the cancer is unrelated or if it's caused in a material part by, we were able to negotiate some language that I think both of us can agree to. It is not a fabulous burden of proof standard. I want to make that clear for employers. It's better than zero chance of ever prevailing. The smoking carve-out, it was a very significant concern of many legislators that people who smoke ad nauseum shouldn't be afforded a cancer presumption, and we do have provisions in there to address that. A reasonable, what we call refer to as the tail. Our main concern with this provision was we couldn't have a firefighter who developed cancer and then for the rest of his life, his or her life, was able to file a cancer presumption claim. We needed a certainty with the ending date. So that's where you'll see in the legislation, 84-month provision, it's 7 years. After you cease employment, after 7 years, the cancer presumption will no longer apply. This particular cancer presumption will no longer apply. And then also an earlier cutoff date for prostate cancer at age 55. So based upon the current provisions of the bill as they're currently written and what we believe to be our five very strong and appropriate safeguards, we do not expect or anticipate a zero rate increase for paid firefighters' workers' compensation coverage for the upcoming year. We'll continue to monitor the fiscal impact and the financial impact of this legislation, and we will raise rates accordingly in the future if we need to as claims develop. I think the final thing I'd like to say about the fiscal impact is you may hear from opponents of this legislation that cancer presumption legislation in other states, I can't recall if Bob testified to the fact that 30 other states have cancer presumption legislation that has been enacted, and you may hear from opponents that it's caused skyrocketing rates in other states. the reasonable requirements that we have in this piece of legislation make it absolutely impossible for us to correlate what other legislation in other states have done with respect to workers' compensation rates. So our rates are developed based upon our own internal claims data, the reasonableness of the provisions of the bill, and we're confident at this point that we will not be raising rates for the upcoming premium year. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thanks to both of you, and we do know how to do workers' compensation in this state. I also just want to thank everybody. It is remarkable that you're both sitting here, because I've been through some of those painful times, and I just want to thank everybody that's been involved in that. And the fact that your data has not been put in the bill folder in fiscal, when we get that there, I would hope they would be able to do the math, get a new up-to-date, more accurate fiscal summary before this is read on the floor. So with that, I would like to open it up to questions, comments, concerns. Representative Kannemer.
Thank you. Bob, I was interested, you know, this is a new topic to me, mostly, except for a couple of hallway conversations. And I guess I was intrigued by your comment about medical studies. And I guess I'd ask maybe if you could drop a little bit of that information by for support in my bill file. As I was just thinking about this myself, I was reflecting back to one of the more miserable experiences in my life, and that was a year's, when I was working on my doctorate, a year's requirement to take statistics. And one of the axioms that they beat into our head is correlation does not equal causation. And I guess that was the piece that I was seeing missing and not having the information. I was sort of headed in that direction. It sounds like that's not entirely the case, and I'd be interested in looking at your data.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kenmer, I'd be happy to provide that. I provided a preliminary electronic copy of many of the studies as well as the science that's in that. I believe I worked with Ms. Van Winkle. That is part of the record, but I'd be happy.
Okay.
I would only caution you, because there has been so many studies. This is one of the most widely studied issues of occupational diseases, that I hope with the new office space you have enough file space for those studies.
I just need to see a couple. I'm just trying to understand it a little better.
Appreciate it. Thanks,
I don't
sir.
Need a voluminous amount.
Thank you, Representative Lynn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is somewhat of an old issue for me. It was 31 years ago that I shared an office with Peg Seminario, who in labor circles has gone on to become one of the foremost experts in safety and health. And she was the one who, at the time when we were both freshman grunts in another job, cued me into the problem that that firefighters face. So I wish she was here today to hear this. But as I look out over the audience, I see representatives from business and from labor, from the division, former Nelson Hall, former chair of the board. And I think it is exceedingly significant that the MLAC has come together and endorsed this unanimously. That's something that doesn't come easy, and I think is extremely significant in terms of underscoring the importance that this has in terms of not only safety and health, but workers' compensation. And Hasina, I am particularly pleased to hear that your many organizations are supporting this, but also while we're able to do this, that it is not going to adversely impact the pure premium rate. Mr. Chairman, this just has the appearance of a win-win-win all the way around. So I'm terribly pleased. And Mr. Livingston, your background materials here are outstanding. So thank you.
Some of them are Hasina's. Well,
give credit
okay.
where you can.
Credit where credit's due here, Mr. Chairman.
Nice shot.
Representative Matthews and Representative Edwards.
And, yeah, I'll say, Ms. Squires, your
your documents are just impeccable. Thank you very much. And Bob, I think it's just great to see you two sitting together. Honestly, I think you know the background as well as I do, being a firefighter. But I guess my comments are, along with Representative Witt, that you look out there and you see the body of people that came together. And this was not just a career firefighter issue working on this issue. This was a career firefighters, volunteer firefighters, special districts, a lot of folks. To see chief officers sitting in the audience in support of this, I'm assuming, to see our firefighters, to see some of our cancer victim firefighters sitting out there that are survivors, I'm excited to see that. And yet I know we have language in there, too, that you're comfortable with and the Oregon State Firefighter Council is comfortable with. So, you know, if you'll oblige, Mr. Chair, it's not so much a question but a comment, and that is on behalf of all the firefighters and all their families, I want to say special thanks to the leadership on this bill. And you've done a phenomenal job, MWAC, obviously, but, you know, Hasina, thank you very much for your effort. And Bob Livingston, you are just a phenomenal pillar for firefighter safety and for all of our families. Thank you for what you do, Kelly Bach, for your leadership, but you guys have done just an incredible job watching out for firefighters and their families while we're working. You're working behind the scenes doing this stuff, and thank you very much. Appreciate your effort.
Representative Edwards, did you have a comment?
Well, I just wanted to follow on all the previous comments. Thank the two of you for coming together on this issue. I share Representative Witt's elation that this is not going to, it appears that there will not be an adverse effect on rates. But I'd also like to add for the record that if in fact, and the studies show that these cancers are highly correlated with this profession, that even if it did have an impact on rates, it's the right thing to do. So I'm glad that you guys worked this out.
Thank you, Representative. That's a very good point. I think they're worth it. So any more questions or comments to this panel?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I just want to say it's interesting. Last night, and we're talking about you guys being together here, reconciliation at the table, I watched the movie Fireproof. If you haven't seen it, it's a pretty interesting movie.
I might watch it with Bob later.
Yeah. Be careful.
Okay. Any further comments or questions of this panel? Okay, thanks a lot, folks.
Thank you for your time.
Next, I'm going to call up Tom Chamberlain and Kelly Bach. Then when they're done, I'm going to call up Ted Coons and Mark Prince after these gentlemen. Go ahead, guys, whenever you're ready.
Oh, yeah. Chairman Schopler, members of the committee, my name is Tom Chamberlain, and I'm president of the Oregon AFL-CIO, representing over 225,000 working families in Oregon. But today, I'm here as a firefighter with 27 years of service to my community. You see, in 1993, I lobbied a cancer bill that actually passed the Senate, and you couldn't keep me out of here from testifying on this bill today because we came very close then. No one in this room except my brothers and sister firefighters know what it's like to be a firefighter. Fireproof, you know, having fire, a gas fire with no smoke so you can see the actor's face, isn't what it's like. You can't see what's going on. You're engulfed in a hostile environment, an environment that seeps into your clothing, your outer gear, your T-shirt, your socks, everything you have. With carcinogens. Excuse me, I can't say to speak this morning. And we take that home with us. It's against our skin. And it's not just at the fire scene. It's at the emergency scene when we kneel down in gasoline. And again, soaks into the clothes in our body. Folks think because we're encased in self-contained breathing apparatus that we have some safety. Well, we do. But it doesn't safeguard us against fire cancer. And most of my career, I worked in an environment where diesel smoke was actually vented into the living quarters. It wasn't vented outside. So where we slept, where we ate, you had diesel in those environments. So you just couldn't get away from it. So this has been a long time coming. I applaud the efforts of all the parties to come up with a bill that can pass. And ask for your support.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kelly Bach. I'm the president of the Oregon State Firefighters Council. We represent 3,000 firefighters in Oregon and 45 locals throughout the state and protect 80% of, or run 80% of the emergency calls in the state. And I'm also a captain at Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue. For the record, my comments are for the Oregon State Firefighters Council. I'll keep mine brief. What I would like just to say is that after last session, we've already heard how contentious it was. We learned that we needed to reach out to a lot of stakeholders, and we did that. And happily, difficult at times, but we were able to come to an agreement that I think protects our firefighters and also gives some fiscal certainty to our employers, which we also recognize as an important part of this whole business, because that's who provides our pay and our benefits, and so we obviously do not want them to be going bankrupt. And so with that said, I would just really like to thank the Oregon Fire Chiefs Association and their leadership. They're going to testify today, the fire district directors and Hasina's group. The Oregon Volunteer Firefighters Association, they came on board and supported this, even though it doesn't cover them. We met with them. I think that's really important to recognize that they saw that they know the exposures that we're enduring when we work in the fire stations and on fire scenes, and then the Oregon Fire District Directors Association. So with that, that's the only comments I have, and I'd be happy if any questions.
Any questions of these gentlemen? All righty, well, thank you guys. Appreciate it. Ted Coons and Mark Prince, please.
Good morning, Chair Schaffler and members of the committee. I'll be brief. I think Hasina and Bob pretty much covered the issue really, really well. The message I'd like to convey to you today is really just twofold.
Oh, for the record, please.
No, excuse me, for the record, my name is Ted Coons. I'm fire chief of the Canby Fire District, and I'm also the president of the Oregon Fire Chiefs Association. First one is that I want to convey to you that this bill has the unanimous support of my board of directors, who are the fire chiefs who represent the firefighters within the state. Additionally, the most important thing, though, is that we are very proud to work and have worked on this compromise and been involved, and we're very proud to sit here today in support of our firefighters and their families. And with that, I'll close my comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead, sir.
Chairman Schaffler and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mark Prince. I'm a battalion chief with the City of Hillsborough Fire Department and the first vice president of the Oregon Fire Chiefs Association. And I certainly want to thank all of you for listening to our testimony today regarding how Senate Bill 2420. Simply stated, you have heard much of the details. 2420 is the right thing to do for our firefighters in the state of Oregon. And the clinical data you will receive will illustrate that. I won't beat up what has already been said, but will state that many of the firefighters in the state of Oregon have a profound love for their job, and these men and women are dedicated to saving the lives and property of the citizens of Oregon and the environment that we choose to live in here. And while the work we do on scene is done in the safest manner possible, it's known that there is an inherent risk that comes with the profession. And that being said, it's our hope that with the legislation we'll hopefully be able to forward and implement in the end, our members, our firefighters, and those who serve you will be taken care of in the end run. So with that, I have nothing further, and I want to thank you again for your time.
Thank you, gentlemen. I really thank you for coming down here and everything you do. And I also would like to point out that Ken Armstrong, who is a lobbyist for the fire chiefs, isn't here today. He's worked on this all along. He had shoulder surgery the other day. I just want to get on the record that he's been involved in this as well. So any questions of these fine gentlemen? All righty then. Well, thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
We have next. Scott Winkles, and Teresa is going to go find Cindy Robert for me. Is Cindy here? Oh, thank you. Come on up.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Scott Winkles representing the League of Oregon Cities. The members of the League of Oregon Cities value all their municipal employees and recognize their obligations to all workers that are injured or become ill as a result of their employment. However, The League cannot support Senate House Bill 2420 in its current form for two reasons. First, the current available science does not support the inclusion of most of the cancers listed in the bill. The National League of Cities is in the process of drafting a research review of available academic quality studies published in peer-reviewed and refereed journals. While the final product is not complete, some factual findings are available. The report reviewed 17 research articles and studies and studied 17 cancers. The ranking method, they were ranked using a method commonly referred to as the Sir Austin Bradford Hill method. This is the statistical method that was used to link cigarette smoking to lung cancer. Using this method, cancer studies in the article were categorized as having a strong association to firefighting, a moderate association, a weak association, or no association. Basing on the finding of this report, the League of Cities is compelled to point out that certain cancers that may indeed have a causal relationship to firefighting are not included in the bill, and some cancers included in the bill cannot be justified by the evidence. For instance, two studies showed a strong relationship between firefighting and thyroid cancer, but it is not included in the bill. Conversely, one study showed a weak relationship between firefighting and mouth cancers or buccal cavity cancers, and eight studies showed no relationship. Hodgkin's disease was shown to have a strong or moderate relationship to firefighting. It is not in the bill. However, stomach cancer, included in the legislation, was found to have 1 week association, and 10 studies found no association. The League has drafted an amendment that offers an alternative list of cancers that have been shown to have a strong causal relationship to firefighting and remove cancers whose inclusion cannot be justified by the available data. Given this, the League is also compelled to point out the constitutional infirmity in the bill. Article 11, Section 15 of the Oregon Constitution states, when the legislative assembly or any state agency requires any local government to establish a new program or provide an increased level of service for an existing program, the state of Oregon shall appropriate or allocate to the local government money sufficient to pay the ongoing, usual, and reasonable cost to performing the mandated service or activity. While this bill does not constitute a new program, the League would strenuously argue that this will require an expanded level service of an existing mandated program, workers' compensation. Therefore, in the event of the passage of this act and cost the city greater than 0.01% of their total budget, the requirement to offer the coverage would become optional for the city. The League has drafted an amendment that would allow cities to shift the financial risk generated by the bill to the state risk pool, thereby correcting the infirmity in this bill. I would also point out that this legislation has passed in other states, and I want to draw your attention to California, where the bill was indeed found to be an unfunded mandate and is being covered by the state's risk pool. Additionally, we have offered an amendment that would allow the cancers to be rebutted based on other medically recognized risk factors than tobacco use. For instance, diet, weight is a risk factor for colorectal cancer. We believe that's a legitimate reason to rebut the bill. I also point out that in the fiscal statement that the city's issued, it may be artificially deflated due to recent changes in the workers' comp rule systems. We based that, City County Insurance based that fiscal impact on costs associated with treating these cancers based on our experience in the medical side of the insurance business. Those risks were based on PPO, preferred provider organization discounts. Those discounts are no longer allowable under the system. Once we have managed care organization contracts, those costs could in fact go up significantly. That concludes my testimony, and I look forward to your questions.
Ms. Robert.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cindy Robert. Actually, the middle name should be uncomfortable right now, but I am proud to represent the City of Medford. You have in front of you the testimony regarding this bill from the City of Medford, so I certainly will not read it to you. However, I would like to highlight one of the aspects. Based on our risk manager's data back to 1996, the only occupational disease incidents we have had for firefighters have been based on hearing loss. So we have not had any cases for cancer, but adding such a presumption to Oregon's statute will have a significant fiscal impact on our city, as premiums will rise when you add more presumptive language. Premiums will rise. Anyone who says otherwise is not being logical. Mr. Chair, in the early 1990s, The firm I was with represented the Washington County Professional Firefighters Association. So I've had the opportunity to understand and be acutely aware of the arguments on both sides of this issue. And frankly, both have merit. For the firefighters, you have arguments based on tragedy, compassion, and the need for respect for our men in uniform. And for the employers, you have arguments based on logic, precedent, cost, and liability. So knowing and having argued both sides, I struggled with exactly what I could say, what I could offer to you today that might be different than what you're hearing. And this is what it is. This is not a black and white issue. It's not about coverage or no coverage. It's not about any of you voting yes or no for our firefighters. And if anyone tries to make you feel like it's that one-sided, it's not. There is a middle ground between no coverage and coverage. There is a halfway, and Oregon is already there. Our occupational disease and workers' compensation system is based on medical evidence. If a case is considered in and of itself, it is not supported or hampered by other cases. Each firefighter, their circumstances, their medical diagnosis, their exposure, and their lifestyle, all that is factored in. Over my 19 years as a lobbyist, I've seen this body take care of lots of problems that are going on outside these doors. But here, I don't see the wrong to the degree that you usually focus on. The current occupational disease statute does not say no to firefighters. It allows them to be compensated for job-related cancer, and it allows them to be considered as an individual when that decision is made. I trust that system, the doctors and the professionals in it, and I think it works.
Thank you. Any questions of these very nice people? Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Cindy, on the back of your testimony, it says 2 years ago the Medford's risk manager estimated the resulting cost to the city approximate $161,000 to $483,000. Is that annual?
Vice Chair Cameron, yes it is. Per year, the premium per year. And as has been pointed out to you, this legislation makes some changes in timing that might make that rate change in the immediate year, but they believe in the long term it will still be that trip go up by 300% per year.
I'll follow up if I may. Regardless of whether those numbers still apply today, they're saying they're going to go up. Where will that come out of the city's budget? Where will that be taken from if, in fact, we don't have a mandate to make the state pay for the increase?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, I learned in 1990 when I made such a statement about, I was asked a question just like that, and I made a statement, and it was taken very wrong, and I was accused of trying to blackmail the legislature, but I don't know any nice way to say it. It'll come out of the budget, and it'll be budget money that could have otherwise been used to hire more public safety personnel. We will have to find the money, but someone will suffer.
Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Yes, please.
Mr. Chairman, Vice Chair Cameron, local government budgets are a zero-sum game. Anything the legislature may grant to one group, it takes away from another. I can't tell you where that's going to come out of. It could come out of library hours. It could come out of payroll. During the Senate Bill 560 debate, we asked city managers this question. To a person, they each said they would confine the cuts to within the fire department, and that would be the recommendation of the city councils. I don't know if that would hold true now, given the state of current budgets, but I mean, the point I think I would like to leave with you is that while the state budget situation is dire, it is dire for local governments and cities as well.
It'll come out of the forest if I have my way.
Mr. Chair, if I may,
get our
you and I, your chainsaw is probably bigger than mine, but I'll be right behind you. If I may ask, I want to try to reconcile the information we have before us, because you're saying the city of Medford, we're seeing a $300,000 increase. Yet when I look at the fiscal on this bill, I see claims of $3 million, and then I'm trying to figure out how much the potential costs could exceed $1 million per claim. But how much is this? You know, how much is this really going to cost our state, our cities, if you add up Medford and the other, I mean, there's 36 counties. I don't know how many cities that have city fire department special districts. How much is this really going to cost in workers' comp premium increases? Because we've got two different numbers here. We got claim numbers, and this one's talking about workers' comp premium increases. Do we have that number someplace on this bill?
Information?
It's in the...
Mr. Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, frankly, the City of Medford was not asked to participate in any fiscal analysis, and so I'm not sure about how are the apples and oranges or oranges and oranges there, but I will tell you this. The changes to the bill this session, as you've heard, have made it easier to say that in immediate time there will not be increases. Because it's going forward. It's the claims going forward from here, not past claims. You don't have to add the same amount of bureau services.
I believe Ms. Van Winkle has something to
I
add.
I may be able to shed a little bit of light, Vice Chair Cameron, in this. In talking to the Workers' Comp Division about this, the information that they had submitted to LFO is from the National Council on Compensation Insurance, in which CIS, City County Insurance Services, does not participate and do not forward that information because they're self-insured. So that's why... There is that part. That's part of the reason the differential in the numbers. Does that make any sense?
No, I Mr. Chair, if I may,
please.
I understand numbers pretty easily. I don't have a number in front of me anywhere today that says if we pass this bill, this is what it's going to cost. There's a claim number in here, but this is what it's going to cost cities and counties and other people that are paying these workers' compensation premiums. Where is that number? And I think that's an important number for this committee to have to determine what the fiscal is on this bill.
Mr. Chairman, Vice Chair Cameron, if I may, in the event, there are two ways to answer this question. For a self-insured city such as the City of Salem, the fiscal impact would be in the event of a claim, then you can rely on the claim number. So if it's $1 million, if the claim results in $1 million cost, which is very easy to do under this bill, the city of Salem would absorb a $500,000 cost, and then their reinsurer would pick up the rest of the claim, and then they would experience a rate increase based on that risk experience. I recognize that's a more nebulous answer than you're looking for, but unfortunately, we still have to generate risk experience before we can actually tell you what an actual percentage increase is going to be. But we do know, based on the claims, that rates will go up.
I like your word, Mr. Winkles, because we are discussing something that is in a nebulous area, an unknown, an estimate, a speculation on your part, I might add. I think... they're worth it, and it is emotional, and it ain't black and white. It is gray, and I am going to, as soon as we finish questions with you folks, we're going to have Mr. Schultz from the Workers' Comp Division come up and talk. Kevin, Representative, are you finished?
Mr. Chair, no, you said it's gray, but how many states have this already?
30.
So there is historical data out there that we ought to be knowing as we're moving forward what the fiscal impact could be to the state of Oregon and the individual counties and cities. And I guess that's all I'm asking for, and I'll be quiet.
All right. Thank you very much. Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Roberts, earlier you made a reference to the workers' comp premiums going up because of a rule not allowing PPOs to...
That would have been Mr. Winkles.
Oh, was that? Oh, okay. It was Mr. Winkles. Excuse me. At least I remembered it. This doesn't really seem to be pertinent to this issue specifically. It seems to me that's a different issue. And then on the flip side of that, I'm wondering, you know, what percentage of workers' comp claims were previous to that rule were covered by PPOs in the first place? It seemed like an odd thing to throw into the mix here.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kenemer, Holby.
Whoever it is down there, Doug.
The reason I brought that up.
I won't.
Representative Holby, I brought that up simply to articulate that the fiscal impact that the League submitted, the City County Insurance Services submitted, may actually be higher because of the change in the rule. The vast majority of the workers' comp claims that the CIS covered were covered under the preferred provider organization discount systems. It was simply to articulate that there may be a discrepancy in future costs based on changes in the rules. That was my purpose.
Representative Esquivel, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think everyone in this room knows that it's going to cost you more to do business. Anyone that disputes that, just go ahead and have some incident on your automobile insurance and you'll find out. It's going to cost you more money to do business. Now, the sad part about this is revenue restructuring, we just found out that cities are going broke. They have a 3% cap on their property tax and their costs are accelerating past 5.2% per year. Even though I went to Medford High School, I can figure out that's going to be bad. And it's going to start getting bad in 2014, 2012. So it's going to cost more. That's the bottom line. How much more? I don't know.
I would venture to say that there's some people down at Medford High School that probably know how to teach statistics pretty well, but represent it best well. Anyway, the cost of business is going up. And if we want to get rid of Measure 5 and allow cities to go out and raise property taxes, Representative, I look forward to you suggesting that somewhere.
Anyway. I have advocated that. Yeah,
well, God bless you. You're a fine American. Representative Thatcher.
Thank you, Chair. It doesn't sound like you were at the table when there were these discussions about this compromise, and I'm wondering if that is the case, and if you weren't at the table, why weren't you?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Thatcher, I can't comment on conversations I didn't witness, but what I can tell you is that the League of Oregon Cities, the Association of Oregon Fire Chiefs, and the Special Districts Association over the interim signed a letter to the International Association of Firefighters to request a sit-down meeting. That never took place with all parties at the table. And we were informed of the deal after the fact.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Thatcher, I would say I frankly wasn't invited, but also wasn't the loudest proponent or opponent in 2007. I think that the two who were the loudest did get together and quiet down, but I was not invited to participate. And I have been lobbying on this issue for the City of Medford for three sessions.
Any further questions? Representative Witt, then Representative Matthews, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was going to ask a question earlier, and I think the administrator already asked or pointed out that Medford has elected to go self-insured.
I sure hope.
Mr. Chair, Representative Witt, we insure through CIS.
Through CIS.
Through the Citigroup.
Okay, and with regard to your being invited, the MLAC process, as far as I know, is an open process, just like these proceedings are an open process. And sometimes the chairman might invite somebody to testify, but usually they don't. I think, is there not some obligation for you to participate in the process if it's going on?
And Mr. Chair, Representative Witt, ouch. You're right, actually, and that is something that we follow. But if you look at the system and how this came down through MLAC, it was very quick. It was not a bill as much as a letter for approval, and I think that you can explain that better than I. But if there was one opportunity, I missed it.
Before you say anything, Mr. Winkles, we just had Mr. Chamberlain in here telling us that this bill, or something like it, was here in 1993.
Mm-hmm.
It is all these years later. And to say that people have not been involved in this and have not understood this and weren't aware of this and some kind of backdoor deal happened, I'm just not buying into that. We have the MLAC process. We have this legislative process. And I can tell you, if I were going to put a deal together, the last people I would invite were those that I knew were going to oppose what I intended to do on behalf of the people of this state. So if they didn't invite you, I don't blame them. Now, I think, in my humble opinion, I believe everyone in this state has been conscious of this issue, aware of this issue, involved in this issue, and has had every opportunity to give their opinion and weigh in on their support or opposition or neutrality on this issue. So I'm not, I'm just very disappointed in the words I hear being said as if a deal was struck in some back room. That really bothers me.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
At no point in time did we say we weren't invited to a deal-making party. We were asked if we were invited to sit down with the two parties who did, in fact, negotiate on this issue. We answered that question. There is no complaint from myself or the City of Medford about lack of involvement in this.
Thank you.
We have testified every session as to our opposition. We have been given that opportunity. I simply answered the question that no, we did not participate in the conversations between Hasina Squires and Bob Livingston.
Thank you, Ms. Robert. And just for the record, I have never had, as chair of this committee, an invitation-only hearing, and I never will.
Thank you, sir.
Robert.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, to answer your concern, I was asked a question. I relayed the facts as I understood them to the best of my knowledge. I make no insinuation.
Thank you.
As to the testimony at MLAC, I personally testified at MLAC at one of the two hearings and voiced a concern specific to the bill regarding the unfunded mandate section of the Oregon Constitution. At the point in which I testified, MLAC was looking at a memo that did not contain bill language, nor did it contain the list of cancers.
Thank you, Mr. Winkles, for that clarification. Any further? Representative Matthews, forgive me, I almost forgot you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm over here biting my tongue, but there's enough firefighters in the room to stop the bleeding if needed. I guess I would, again, jump on board with the MLAC. I don't believe it was a one-quick session. I believe they had several meetings regarding this. It was a lot of effort. You may say that there was two parties involved, with Bob Livingston and the Hasina Squires didn't participate in those, but those two parties represent a lot of people engaged in this bill. As far as not having a seat at the table, I can't answer that, Mr. Winkle, but you did sit in my office just 2 days ago, and these amendments weren't brought to me, and you never discussed it with me on that. Having said that, when you say there's a program in place now, and these were your words, that we have a middle ground and we're there now, any idea how difficult it would be for a firefighter to ever say, this was the date, this was the time, and this was the incident that I ended up with cancer on that call? Do you have any idea, without presumption, how difficult that must be?
Mr. Chair, Representative Matthews, first of all, I did say ouch on the MLAC thing because I did miss that, and I acknowledged that I missed that. Secondly, Representative, as someone who yesterday went through a battery of tests for cancer, I can tell you that I have only scratched the surface of the difficulty that these firefighters must have, and it hurt on the surface. So I'm sure with their depth, it is incredibly painful for them and their family. And can they pinpoint when they got it? No. Can I? No. That being said, all occupations in this state who come under the occupational disease statute have this same regulatory system to help determine if their disease was caused or had some relation to their occupation. There are several other professions that work under these laws, and I'm not sure that there is such a monumental difference, a monumental need to change it for the firefighters.
Ms. Roberts, you've always been a very consummate professional. I enjoy working with you. And in light of what you've just said, I'm sure I speak for everyone here in our thoughts and prayers, as always. Quite welcome. Mr. Winkles.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Matthews, I did not share the amendments with you when I met with you last week because I did not have them. I got them yesterday afternoon. We hadn't even submitted a note at the time of our meeting. Within 20 minutes of having those amendments, I had dropped them off with both the chairman and with Ms. Squires. There was never any attempt on my part to conceal anything from you. That is not how I operate.
And in your defense, Mr. Winkles, I think I made it clear to you that the chair is not going to hear the amendments.
Sir.
Any further questions of this nice panel here? Very good. Thank you very much. And Cindy, God bless you. We all love you. All righty then. I think that is it. Oh, Mr. Schultz, forgive me. Yes. Mr. Schultz, would you like to come up and shed some light on this for us? You always get all the great work, don't you?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd be happy to. My name is John Schultz. I'm the administrator for the Workers' Compensation Division, which is part of Department of Consumer and Business Services. And I am presuming that you're expecting that I can shed more light on the fiscal or potential fiscal, specifically relating, I believe it was to cities and counties. Right. Okay. Thank you. Yes, I think I can. We asked the National Council on Compensation Insurance to do an analysis, a fiscal analysis, and a projection in regard to this presumption of compensability in this bill. The National Council on Compensation Insurance is a rate-making organization for workers' compensation, and Oregon uses NCCI in terms of how we develop our pure premium rates. They analyzed the bill and projected that if HB 2420 is enacted, it would result in a 2 to 7% increase in workers' compensation costs for employers of firefighters. That would be, in terms of dollars, approximately $200,000 to $1.1 million. This would likely fall mostly on political, governmental entities, because they are the employers of firefighters. Other point that they made in their analysis that I think is probably worth sharing is that cancer cases that occur now that could come into the workers' compensation system under this presumption that currently are not very well may be being covered under group health insurance. So there is something of a cost savings on the group health side that hasn't been brought up. And it's just a piece of the fiscal analysis. To summarize, they project a 2 to 7% increase for those governmental entities that employ firefighters. For self-insured, there's no reason to expect that would be any different than for entities that purchase insurance. The overall impact on the overall rate for Oregon is expected to be negligible, using their term, since benefits from the firefighter class code represents a very small proportion, actually less than 1%, of Oregon's total system participants. So while within that group or that classification of workers, yes, there would be an increase in costs across the system, there would be a negligible impact. And again, to just summarize, there would be some savings on the group health side from this.
Thank you, Mr. Schultz. And Brittany, are you finished?
Yes, I was just going to ask if I could answer any questions.
Well, I have just a comment and then open to questions. You know, doing business costs money. We ask these men and women to respond to emergencies. And you know what? I'll tell you what. We have to reimburse them and take care of them. And if we just want to save money, why don't we just cut off their health care to their families and cut off the legislators' health care to their families? You have to ask yourself, do you want this service or not? Do you want these men and women responding to your house when it's on fire or tearing your family out of a wrecked car? And if you do, you have to compensate them accordingly. I do not think this is a good investment. It's worth it. I wouldn't do their job. You couldn't pay me to do their job, and I'm grateful they want to do their job, and I, as a taxpayer, am willing to pay for it. Representative Witt, then Representative Cameron, then Representative Holby. Excuse me, Representative Kenner, then Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With your permission, I'd like to ask what I think will be a series of quick questions.
Yes, please, go right ahead.
Thank you. John, the chairman said that we do workers' compensation right in Oregon. Can you tell me how many successive years it's been now that we have that premium costs in Oregon have either gone down or stayed level?
Mr. Chair, Representative Witt, yes, I can. 19 years.
19 consecutive years, and in that period of time, what's the percentage of cost decreases?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Witt, approximately 62%.
62% decline in
premium costs
in 19 years.
Yes.
And now I want to ask you a question. I don't intend to put you on the spot, but can you translate that into dollars? Do you have that off the top of your head?
Oh, Mr. Chairman, Representative Witt, I should, but I would like to be able to get back to you on that. It is several billion dollars, but I don't have the exact figure with me today.
I think the last time I checked, which was a year ago, it was in the neighborhood of $15 billion. Are there other states that come anywhere as close to Oregon in terms of the savings that our state has realized?
Mr. Chair, Representative Witt, no other state can boast the savings and the run that Oregon has been enjoying over the last 19 years.
And obviously that would include then the 30 other states that have also enacted similar kinds of legislation.
Mr. Chair, Representative Witt, to the best of my knowledge, that would be true.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Kenner, please.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to go back to a little earlier issue. While I think it's very unlikely that I would be inclined to support the League of Cities amendments, as a matter of public interest, I'd like to see a copy of them.
Yeah, absolutely, Representative. I assume Mr. Winkles would pass it out to the rest of the committee if he would do that, or this office will take care of it for you.
I guess, you know, your comment, we're not going to hear the amendments.
That's
suggested
correct.
It wasn't going to be passed out, and I'd like to at least
that is absolutely correct. So, and that is the prerogative of this chair, and I'm exercising it, and we're not going to hear those amendments, and if I have the votes, we're going to vote this bill out today to the floor. Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John, I'm curious, just for my own information, can you tell me, prior to the rule disallowing PPOs in the workers' comp arena, what percentage of the workers' comp claims were handled through PPOs as opposed to other?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holvey, I don't know the answer for certain. It would be no more than 50%, and my understanding would be that it would be far less than that.
All right.
But I don't know precisely.
If you can or do have that data somewhere, I'd like to get it sometime.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holvey, we will look into that. The data that we have is where disputes were brought forward to us, and I think that's just a small representation of where PPO discounts were being applied.
And John,
but we'll do our best.
Thank you.
Thank you. And any data, distribute it to everybody, as always.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to do that.
Okay. Representative Cameron, I believe you have a comment.
Oh, yeah. Mr. Chair, the follow-up with Representative Kenner.
Yes.
And your statement about not hearing amendments. And I want to go back to to when we approved the rules. And we made a statement, and you said, yes, we will, because of the way the minority report rules are, you said, yes, we would have a chance to hear any amendments that the minority wanted to hear. So not that today this is an amendment, I hadn't even seen it, but I want to be clear. You just said it's your prerogative, and I understand that, to not hear amendments, but you also said at the beginning during rules that you would hear amendments that we wanted to hear. So I just want to clarify that.
Nope. I'm a flawed individual.
Any further comments or questions?
Mr. Chairman, what is your policy then?
You want to hear the amendments, Representative?
I don't know. I haven't seen them. I just think there's an obligation to have a public discussion about public issues, and I don't think truncating the discussion it's a fairness issue. All Oregonians have the right at their public legislature to have their moment, and they have the right to have their moment voted down. And I suspect I'm right with you on where this bill ought to be, but I'd like to have the information because
that's fair enough. Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know that. I mean, we have a public hearing today, and if the amendments haven't been presented to the committee or the chair, I don't know. They should have been presented by now. I guess that's all I'm saying. That's not this committee's fault.
I thought they had been distributed to the committee. I don't know where Mr. Winkles went. Is he here?
Scott Winkles, representing the League of Oregon Cities. My apologies to the committee. I did not have the copies are being made right now. As Mr. Chairman, as you made it abundantly clear in your office yesterday that the amendments would not be heard. My sincere apologies. That is being rectified as we speak.
I am not interested in hearing the amendments. If it's the opinion of this, the majority of this committee to hear these amendments, then we'll hear them. But personally, we've had this issue before us for years, and I don't know what more to say. So, thank you, Mr. Winkles. Representative Matthews, then Edwards.
Mr. Chair, my only comment here, and you know where I stand on this bill, and what I would like to say is I support you as the chair, if that's your decision. I simply would want to make sure that because of the integrity of this bill and all of the work that so many people have gone into this and the importance that this means to a large group of firefighters, but more importantly, all of their families, I would want to make sure that we weren't going to compromise the process if that ever came into question. And so if it's a matter of distributing bills so we can all look at it, or amendment, I'm sorry, so that we can all look at it and then vote our heart, as you often encourage me, then I would say that we should probably go forward with at least having those distributed to the group, take our votes today, and, in my opinion, move this bill forward.
Representative Edwards?
He said almost exactly what I was going to say.
Thank you. I believe Ms. Van Winkle is getting the amendments for everyone. There's no one left to testify. I'm going to call up Cena Squires and Bob Livingston, forgive me. They wanted to rebut some comments that have been made here.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, has Cena Squires on behalf of the Special Districts Association of Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity to make a few comments while you're waiting for these amendments. A couple of my comments do relate to the amendments, so I'm kind of the calm, non-emotional one. I understand this issue is very contentious, and I'm not a firefighter. I don't run into burning buildings for a living. So Mr. Livingston has afforded me the opportunity to make some rebuttal comments, and if he chooses, he'll follow up. The first issue I'd like to address is Mr. Winkle's testimony that the science doesn't support all 12 of the cancers listed in the bill. Many of you will remember from the last legislative session, I came to your offices and I said the science is there solidly, 100%, for 3 of the cancers. Mr. Winkles is now his testimony is was respected was about a study that isn't yet complete that may now show that 9 of the cancers that are listed in the bill are directly related to firefighting as an occupation. This issue of the science is unsettled. It is still unsettled. It has always been unsettled, whether it's 12, 20 systemic cancers, 3, 2. Last session, I could absolutely, with certainty in my own mind, represent my client and say that there were 3 absolute cancers that definitely did have some correlation that we could statistically find Representative Kenemer with respect to firefighting. I think whether the number is 10, 12, 9, 7, there is medical evidence in some form or fashion for all of the cancers that are listed in this bill. It is just whether or not you want to accept the study as being valid or invalid. And Bob and I could sit here for hours arguing about the medical science. Last session, we brought in medical experts to refute each other, and we chose not to do that this time because we knew between the two of us, for those 12 cancers that are listed in the bill, that there is some medical science that exists to provide some sort of correlation, whether it's causal or I'm not a statistician. I can't speak to that effect, but there are studies on each one of those cancers. With respect to the issue of the mandate provision, I believe it's tab 5 of my testimony. MLAC had this very same question, and I was present for all of the MLAC hearings, and there were 3. It was not a quick process. We studied it. We looked at it. We had 3 different hearings. Tab 5 of my testimony does contain a memo that was written to MLAC in response to the questions about the unfunded mandates provision. Does it apply? Will it apply? How does it work? What is the opinion of the Special Districts Association? I'm not a lawyer. Our legal counsel didn't review it. Might it qualify under the unfunded mandates provision? Possibly. I disagree with Mr. Winkle's characterization that workers' compensation system changes are increased levels of service within an existing program. Workers' compensation is a program. It's a system-wide program. If every single time that a change was made to workers' compensation with respect to PPD or anything else, and we were coming to you and challenging whether or not the unfunded mandates provision had made a change in that system or program, you would be inundated with unfunded mandate claims from local governments. Also, one thing that Mr. Winkles failed to mention that is in my testimony to MLAC is that the mandates provision under ballot measure 30, was originally ballot measure 30, approved by the voters. This is mandate provision language that is in the Oregon Constitution. It does have a provision that allows for override of the legislature by 3/5 vote. And I think that's an important note to have left out. With respect to, I know you haven't seen the amendments. Mr. Winkles did accurately characterize that as soon as he got the amendments, he did bring them to me, pass me in the hall, and I did receive them, so I appreciate that, and I want to make sure that you all know that he did communicate that. And Mr. Livingston was actually doing a real job yesterday in EMT training, so I got them to him as soon as he was out. But one of his amendments allows for a local government to request that DAS take over the risk management and insurance program of a local government. I can't imagine under any uncertain circumstance that our association would ever delegate authority for risk management or insurance to the Department of Administrative Services for the state of Oregon. We strongly oppose that amendment. I can't imagine why League of Oregon Cities would want it. They operate their own insurance program, and unless they want to eliminate their entire insurance program for the association, I can't imagine why they would propose that. With respect to the risk factors, one of Mr. Winkle's amendments is related to risk factors. It says it's in the tobacco use section. His amendment says, or other established risk factors, and you heard him testify to the effect that if you're obese, then it affects a different type of cancer. I want to be very clear that the risk factor that we believe that we have adequate for the tobacco use, it's a tobacco use carve out. It's not smoking. It's all tobacco. So it doesn't just apply to if you smoke. And I want to make sure that that's been made clear to the committee. So with respect, so just like the science, the fiscal information, I really, really can't articulate to you more how unsettled the fiscal impact statement information might be because everybody runs their own insurance program. So Mr. Schiltz will tell you that NCCI's rate is projected to be X. I want to make sure that we get it on the record because I haven't heard it yet today, that the city of Portland is projecting a 2.7% rate increase with the result of passage of House Bill 2420. That does not trigger the unfunded mandates provision. City of Portland has somewhere between 600 and 700 paid firefighters. They're gigantic. And that is what they are projecting with the passage of House Bill 2420. As I previously indicated, we believe that we know that we will not, at this point for the upcoming policy period, be raising rates. Might we in the future? I testify to that effect. We need to see how this bill is going to affect the claims that are filed within our program. The City of Medford, I want to make clear, is not a self-insured city. They are part of the City-County Insurance Service Program. So I don't recall if it was Representative Cameron or Representative Thatcher that asked, so if rates were to increase, where is the money going to come from? Since they're not a self-insured program, it is a pool that provides insurance services to all of those cities, just like my pool for special districts insurance services provides insurance service to all the rural fire protection districts. There are claim reserves that exist. It would be irresponsible, and actually we passed legislation last session that requires a minimum claim reserve for an insurance pool. So claim reserve exists, and it's in the millions of dollars. So will there be an impact later? Yes. But if this bill did require a 2%, let's say we just adopted the City of Portland's 2.7% number. If we adopt that provision, claim reserve exists, and I assume that City-County Insurance Services would use their existing claim reserve rather than jack the rates up immediately. So I want to make sure that the committee understands that insurance companies do have claim reserve. And then finally, I want to... on that fiscal impact provision, the other thing that you asked Representative Cameron was, what about all these other states? I want to make it clear, every other state has a completely different insurance, and we are a leader in workers' compensation insurance. We are a different state than every other state. There are different cancers. There are different provisions in all of those bills, so their fiscal impact statements to me, and I told you this last legislative session, it doesn't matter what other states' fiscal impacts were to me. What matters is our claims data and our experience. Finally, I want to address this issue of the characterization that people were not allowed to participate. And I want to respond specifically to Representative Thatcher's question that why weren't you at the table? And what I heard the testimony from the League of Oregon Cities was, we, League of Cities, Fire Chiefs Association, and Special Districts Association, sent a letter to the Firefighters Association requesting a formal sit-down meeting. We did, in fact, do that. We, special districts, did in fact have a meeting with the Firefighters Association. They, the Oregon Fire Chiefs Association, did in fact have a meeting with the State Firefighters Council. During those meetings, it was made absolutely clear with the Firefighters Association, I can't speak to why it is that League of Oregon Cities didn't have a meeting. If they wanted a meeting, they could have called Bob and said, hey, I understand you've met with special districts and the Fire Chiefs Association. Why won't you meet with us? I think it would be inaccurate to characterize the State Firefighters Council as ignoring the fact that the League of Oregon Cities requested a meeting. We all three wrote a letter. It was on joint letterhead, and I clearly communicated to the League of Oregon Cities and their insurance program that we had sat down. The fire chiefs also communicated that they had sat down with the Firefighters Association. At no point in time did I withhold information about what was occurring. I met regularly with their insurance staff to explain to them what it was we were talking about, what it was we were negotiating, and I repeatedly requested what will be the position of the League of Oregon Cities, and the answer that I was given, and with all due respect, I appreciate, don't know what it will be until we see what's in the bill and what the fiscal impact is, and I appreciate that, but I don't think that it's fair to characterize the natures of any discussions that went on as we weren't at the table. No, you weren't at the table. You have 39 fire departments. We insure half of the state of Oregon's fire departments. The City of Portland and all other cities and all affected stakeholders, Volunteer Firefighter Association, elected officials, OFDDA, OFCA, all of us, we were all at the table. In one way or the other, we were representing the positions. If you disagree with the positions, I can respect that. But there was no door slammed on any negotiation. Special districts did not go and cut a deal with the Firefighters Association. We believe we crafted responsible legislation that actually will provide us with some stability and predictability in the future.
Before you go, Bob, I'd like to add on to that right there. I told Mr. Winkles I wasn't interested in hearing his amendments, and I'm not going to hear his amendments. In no way, shape, or form did I tell him he could not provide the amendments to these good members up here. He could have, and the member could have come forward and asked to hear them. As far as people getting their day in court, there will be a long, long, and growing list of bills that this committee will be assigned that will not get a hearing, because in the chair's opinion, they're not something I think would be the benefit of the state. That is just, that's the way it is. That's the way it's always been. And it isn't just this committee or this chair. That's just the way it happens here. So I do not agree that people will not get their day in court. This still will be in the Senate. I'm fairly confident Mr. Winkles will provide his amendments to the good sheriffs over there, whoever is assigned this committee. I do have every intention of working this bill today and sending it to the floor, and my colleagues who are upset with my actions will have every opportunity to express them on the House floor. Mr. Livingston, please.
Mr. Chair, thank you again. For the record, Bob Livingston, representing the Oregon State Firefighters Council. I just want to give you an opportunity in the committee to the chair. I'm fully prepared and ready to give you some time and some understanding of the science. I'm happy to go into the healthy worker effect. I'm happy to go into shortcomings of epidemiological studies. I'm happy to discuss mortality versus incidence statistics. I'm happy to talk about statistical significance. I'm happy to talk about dose response relationship. I'm happy to talk about length of follow-up. I'm happy to talk about what other states have done. I'm prepared to do that. As Ms. Squires has so eloquently communicated, we had experts from in the field on this bill last time in Senate Bill 560. Yes, there is some debate regarding the science. However, the facts still remain. And it is acknowledged by the International Association of Fire Chiefs. It's recognized by the International Association of Firefighters. It's recognized by Oregon OSHA. It's recognized by MLAC. It's recognized by a list that grows and grows that the fact remains firefighters are at a higher rate of incidence of cancer. So, Mr. Chair, I guess I'm happy to go into those if you believe that it's necessary, and I'm happy to spend much time if that is. If not, I'll have a few closing comments, but before I do that, I guess I'm looking for some direction there, Mr. Chair.
Any questions on those issues of Mr. Livingston? Thank you. Go ahead, Bob.
Thank you. I think I just closed with just...
Oh, forgive me, Bob. Mr. Representative Holby.
Not really a question, but Bob, I know I've talked to you about smoke before, and I've been studying the effects of just smoke and the toxics contained in them for the last 4 years, and you don't have to convince me. Thank you.
Thanks.
That's another bill, Mr. Representative.
Yeah. Oh. That could be in this committee.
I guess, Mr. Chair, I just would want to emphasize a couple of points. And once again, Hasina has done a much better job than I probably could articulate in framing the issues for you. But one thing, and I think Mr. Schultz did a good job of this, recognizing NCCI, which is a neutral body, they do a great job. They are the gold standard, according to DCBS, when it comes to workers' compensation rates. I think it's important, and I appreciate the fact that Mr. Witt recognize that for 19 years we have seen rates either stay the same or decrease. Even with the passage of this bill, and yes, it does affect local governments, both special districts and municipalities, NCCI is saying, hey, we anticipate that more than likely you're going to see a 2 to 7% rate increase, not overall for their rate increase, a 2 to 7% rate increase in the firefighter classification. It's important to know that workers' compensation, as I'm sure many of you are already aware of this, they have many various classifications. They have one for secretaries. They have one for cooks. They have one specifically for firefighters, and they have one that separates a volunteer from firefighters. These are very specifics. So while I'm certainly, we may have had the same math teacher, Representative Esquivel, I'm not a math major myself, but I think it's pretty easy to project that if we've had 19 years of no increase in workers' compensation rate, Mr. Schultz recognizes that it's less than 1% of the overall workers' compensation of people that we're affecting, It's more than likely, even with a slight increase for the firefighter classification, whether you're self-insured, whether you're a special districts, whether you're a member of CIS, it's pretty easy to project based on past and where we're going into the future, and with the provisions that are the safeguards in this bill, that it's realistically that when workers' compensation rates are set again, that even with a slight increase for the firefighter classification as a whole, even local governments could see a decrease. So with that, Mr. Chair, I guess I would just close with this. One thing, while I appreciate and you know, admire the opponents of this bill, one thing I would caution and hope that this committee does remember, let's not reduce this issue down to statistics. There's many people in this room that are cancer survivors. You know, just 2 days ago, we had fire service day here. I had plenty of people come up to me and say, hey, it's really nice. It's nice to see the ladder trucks, the huge American flag out there. Here are the pipes and drums. You know, and it was a nice setting. The fact remains, though, the times that I wear my Class A uniforms are typically for funerals of firefighters, or in times when a firefighter, and just so we kind of put a little personal note on this, the times when either myself or many in the room, you know, find out that the 42-year-old firefighter that had lymphoma has died and you attend his funeral, or the 43-year-old firefighter with prostate cancer, the 34-year-old firefighter with colon cancer, the 32-year-old firefighter with breast cancer, the 52-year-old dead firefighter with brain cancer, and the 37-year-old firefighter with stomach cancer. I've sat with those people before. I've had to look their children and their wives in the eyes and say, we're going to get through this. And they ask me why. And so with that, Mr. Chair, I would only close with this thought. If you will, in your brochure and the pamphlet, and if I can use a video illustration, if you would turn to page 6 and spend some time looking at this document, you will see of the cancers that House Bill 2420 deals with, there's information that you can look at and that will show. These are numbers that are not made up. These are numbers that come from epidemiological studies that have been done throughout the years that show the increased risk of cancer. Further, on the same page, you can look at the states that already provide some type of legal definition for their and protection for their firefighters. Again, Oregon is not cutting edge. Again, we're not going to see a market increase, if any, in rates. And I appreciate, once again, the fact that this committee has taken so much time on this bill, and I truly appreciate the partnership and the cooperation with many of the stakeholders that we've done. And so with that, Mr. Chair, I truly, sincerely, and appreciate, on behalf of all of the firefighters and their families, appreciate your time today and appreciate this committee's efforts.
Thank you, Bob. And I want to clarify for the record, too, a question's been asked of me, and I want to comment. Representative Cameron asked about amendments, and if I will go back and check the record and see exactly what I said. That we were, I believe, we were in the context of discussing minority reports or the rules relating to minority reports. I want to point out that no member here has come forth with an amendment or suggested a minority report. As far as amendments, if there isn't my policy, Representative Kennemer, if there is an amendment and a member wants to put that amendment and possibly create a minority report, I will hear it. But I will not hear every. I have been here, sat right in this room, and had people come in with 25 amendments on a bill. And I can promise you that then they do it to obstruct, delay, prevent, and deny. And it's my job to sit right here and wade through all that and decide what merits a hearing and what doesn't. And by God, that's exactly what I'm going to do. Representative Edwards, then Representative Kennemer.
For those of us, or many of us, heard this issue last session, and is it not fair to say that the two of you were here and were here on this issue, right? Is that a fair characterization?
Mr. Chair, that'd be an understatement.
Okay.
I'll loan you a
Okay. There we go. So it was stated earlier that there is a halfway point on this issue.
Did either of you, for the record, did either of you get everything that you wanted in your negotiations?
Mr. Chair, Representative Edwards, the answer is no. And I think I can speak for Hasina on this. Having been involved in many conversations, it's hard. And I recognize that, you know, and I appreciate the fact that it's harder on you. You are the ones that set policy for the state of Oregon. And, you know, we've recognized that at times you have to, you know, everybody has to make compromise. And all I can say is that when we agreed on a package deal, I walked away and said, did I do as good a job for the firefighters and their families? And my feeling was, you know, you probably didn't do as good a job. And I believe now, having worked with Hasina, she did the same thing. And my experience and my expertise with a master's in public administration with an emphasis in management labor relations is that when you have both sides that walk away from a table feeling that they didn't quite do the right thing and feeling not so good about it, you're probably right where you need to be.
Thank you.
Representative Campbell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just wanted to kind of clarify your comment. If I understood, assuming we're not in a mode of being obstructionists, members are also welcome to introduce amendments to see if the committee might support them.
Representative Kemmerer, of course.
Okay. I appreciate that. I just, you know, and I can appreciate some of your frustration, too. I guess for me, this topic was one I dealt with back in the 90s, but haven't much thought about it since then. Until yesterday, as a matter of fact. And so, you know, it takes a little bit to get up to speed, and I guess as a general rule, my personal perspective is I like to hear within the limits of time and everything, all sides, because I think my job is to try and make the best decision of things that I'm not always an expert on, and I just, that's where I am, and I would appreciate if people have ideas. I'd love to hear what they are, may or may not support them, and after a brief review of the minutes, the amendments, particularly that inclusion of DAS, I find that completely unacceptable. But I will appreciate the opportunity to look it over, and thank you for that.
And thank you, Representative Kemmerer. By no way, I'm not suggesting any member up here is obstructing anything. If the lobbyist didn't distribute some information, there's nothing I can do about that. I think I did clarify what my policy is. I hope that's satisfactory to you. So with that being said, unless there's any more further questions or comments to these good people, I'm going to close this public hearing.
Mr. Chair.
Teresa, please.
Before we close, I do need to enter two pieces of background materials I submitted to the committee for the record. The one you received earlier was from is what the Workers' Compensation Division submitted to Legislative Fiscal for the impact statement. The other item, which was emailed yesterday, was from the Oregon State Firefighters Council, some background materials, medical studies that Mr. Livingston referred to earlier in his testimony.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
With that, I'm going to close public hearing on House Bill 2420, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2420. Representative Barton.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to be heard for a moment. I'd like to create some legislative history, if I can beg your patience and this committee's
Please.
Patience. I am actually now speaking specifically to the Court of Appeals, should they ever have occasion to listen. And speaking specifically to my intent, I plan to vote yes. And I want to explain that. My intent, and I cannot speak for the other members who also vote yes. As I perceive it, the intent of this bill...
Representative, may I interrupt? I'd like a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2420 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Holvey moves House Bill 2420 to the floor with due pass recommendation. Please forgive me.
Thank you. The intent of this bill, as I see it, is to...
With a due pass recommendation, did I say that?
Yep. Very good. It's just hitting the open field, Mr. Chair. The intent of this bill is to facilitate the compensation of a certain class of workplace injuries in which the causation element is notoriously difficult to prove in any individual case. And although this bill has been, I think, drafted as precisely as possible, it is possible, if not foreseeable, that ambiguities may arise in the course of litigation in the coming years. And it is my intent that this bill, this legislation, be construed as broadly as possible to facilitate its intent, and construed broadly as possible with respect to the coverage class and with respect to the kinds of afflictions that are covered under this bill, and indeed other ambiguities that I can't foresee at this time. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Any further comments or questions? Representative Thatcher, please.
So I will not have the technical soliloquy going here. I will say that I don't like this bill. I don't. But I think last year's was a lot worse, and just like Senate Bill 400 that I ended up supporting was a compromise bill, compromise piece of legislation. I really think this is going to be as good as it gets, and I would like to put an end to this. 1993 to 2009, I'm going to be supporting it.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Matthews.
Yeah, I will be supporting this, and I think you know, and I think the collaborative effort speaks for itself. I want to make it clear to everybody here, though, that I don't know how many classifications of employees out there have their own Cancer Support Life Network. The IFF does have that for its members and its families, for survivors as well as those that are deceased, and it is a very important problem. It's one that we are going to deal with. Obviously, we're dealing with our veteran situations as well. Many of our firefighters are veterans themselves. But I will be supporting this bill, and I'm going to ask, too, that our colleagues who are in support of this on this committee also do the good work on behalf of these firefighters. I Bob Livingston works a 56-hour work week in addition to his hours of being a lobbyist, which I love to call him. And so I would just ask that for those of us that are supporting this bill, that we would support it further throughout our own caucuses.
And I'd like to recognize my friend Bill Humbert back there, who's a cancer survivor and a firefighter. Okay, any further comments, questions, concerns regarding this bill before the clerk calls a roll? All right, then. Could the clerk call a roll, please?
We're not going to get the grass seed from there.
He doesn't want that bill on this committee. I didn't
want
to do that.
Representative Esquivel.
No.
Representative Holby.
Aye.
Representative Kettimer.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Representative Thatcher.
Aye.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hart.
Aye.
Vice Chair Cameron.
Aye.
Chair Schaffler.
Chair votes aye. So moved. Representative Matthews, would you be interested in carrying this bill on for?
Absolutely. I'd be extremely honored.
Thank you,
Chair.
Thank you very much. If there's nothing else today, I believe we're finished, Teresa. All right.